It's Life Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Dystopian themes are common in fiction for young readers, and at first blush, it might seem like Piper, the heroine of Jaleed Johnson's new middle grade novel, inhabits a dystopian world. But while Piper's circumstances are tough, her time is actually the industrial age in a fantasy world called Solace. The novel is called The Mark of the Dragonfly, and it opens as Piper has discovered an injured girl in the meteor fields outside her small scrapper town. It chronicles Piper's journey to help the girl, Anna, figure out who she is and where she came from. Jaleed Johnson's journey to Milwaukee was an easier one. She made the trip up from Illinois to speak at classes in Elm Grove and New Berlin, and she stopped by our studio as well. Nice to meet you. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've written novels in the past for a particular line of novels. There's a Dungeons and Dragons line of books that you've written for, but this one is a story entirely of your own making. How did you approach this novel differently than your other work?
The biggest difference in writing The Mark of the Dragonfly was that I got to create my own world from scratch, which was an amazing experience because I got to decide, you know, it's a fantasy world. I got to decide what the magic was like. I got to decide the different species and creatures that inhabit it. I created a whole world guide for myself where I sketched a map and I had lists of the food and drink, the characters and species that appear in the world. So that was a whole lot of fun and very different from writing in an established world, which is what the Dungeons and Dragons line of books are.
Well, and being that it's a fantasy world, it's not even like taking an existing place like Milwaukee or Chicago and trying to make the characters work in it. You've set it in this world called Solace, which is Earth-like, but it is not Earth. How fleshed out did it have to be before you could set the characters in motion?
Well, I knew that I wanted a world that had echoes of Earth, had echoes of our own world. And I liked exploring the idea of Solace being a world where the boundary between other worlds was thin, where on certain nights these violent meteor storms would bring down these objects from other worlds, not just from our own world, objects we might recognize, but things that we wouldn't have any idea what they were, forgotten bits of technology, art, and literature. And I like the idea of putting them into this new world and wondering what the people there would think of these objects. How would they use them? How would they fix them up and make them their own?
Is that part of the enjoyment for you, is not only introducing your readers to these characters and hoping they get to know the people that inhabit these stories, but also they're discovering the world as they're reading along?
Absolutely. One of my favorite things growing up as a reader was reading fantasy novels, but any novel where the setting would sweep me away to a different place where I could see, you know, and touch and taste the world and really inhabit it. As a kid, I loved and was amazed at how authors could do that, could make me feel these emotions and feel the world. And I really wanted to develop that ability to do that for other readers.
As I was getting ready for this, I was trying to figure out the significance to your setting. And there's this subgenre of fantasy that I guess I wasn't really familiar with beforehand called steampunk. And
yes.
I wonder, that it, obviously, if this is not, strictly speaking, a steampunk novel, it certainly has echoes of it. And I wonder how much that genre influences what you do.
It did influence it to a great degree, actually. I've been a fan of steampunk. And not just the idea of steam technology. I mean, obviously, there's the train, the steam engine that is a centerpiece of the book. But the idea of using these different technologies, I always say that the book is a combination of an industrial revolution and an age of exploration, because you have these two competing governments, one that wants to develop technology, airship technology, steam ocean steamers to explore unknown realms, and the other country who wants to develop weapons and take over, and the clash between these two governments and how it creates a class system and how the people are caught in the middle in the struggle and how they suffer. And I think that's a big component in steampunk as well, that idea of the common people, you know, struggling against these powers that are developing these technologies.
There are clues to the era in which it's taking place. I mean, your hero, Piper, is a scrapper. She lives in this village made up of people who collect debris that comes in on these meteor strikes. And there's a reference to a book that's found that looks suspiciously like The Wizard of Oz.
Yes. When I was playing with the idea of a time period, I was shooting for sort of a more if you were to put it in Earth terms, it would be like a Victorian age. It would be the sort of the steampunk genre. But I took a few liberties here and there with the technology. I was picturing mid to late 1800s. I mean, obviously, I didn't want the technology to be too advanced. I didn't want the scrappers pulling out, you know, iPads from the from the meteor fields. So the technology is kind of more in Victorian times.
Well, let's talk about Piper. She is around the age of your audience, early teens, I guess. But she's a pretty self-sufficient girl for her age.
Yes, she is. She's had to grow up quickly, not only living in the scrap towns, but she's lost her father at the beginning of the novel, who's passed away working in a factory. And so she's really had to look out for herself and to try to survive. So that has definitely aged her beyond her years.
And the one thing that she is really, really good at that we learned fairly early on is she really has a way with machines.
Yes, she is. She's a talented machinist. In fact, she's the most talented machinist in her scrap town. The people of her village will bring her machines that have broken down, that they've scavenged from the meteor fields, and they will have her fix them. She's so talented that she has a great reputation. And also, some people can't believe that she's so talented that that she could make these machines work. They say that some machines will only work for her.
Well, and this is a good transition to the event that sets the story in motion. She's discovered an injured girl. What do we know about Anna as we meet her?
Anna is a very mysterious girl. In fact, when Piper first finds her, she thinks she's dead, that she's been killed in this meteor storm. But when she regains consciousness, she's completely disoriented. She doesn't know. She's lost her memory. She doesn't know who she is, where she comes from. And she gradually remembers her name. And the only distinctive feature about her is that she is marked. There's a mysterious tattoo on her arm of a dragonfly, which is an indication to Piper. She recognizes the symbol. It means that this girl is a very important person, that she's protected by the king of the dragonfly territories.
The two of them, Piper and Anna, find their way onto a train, the 401, in an effort to get to the capital of the dragonfly territories, Noveen, to presumably send Anna back to her home.
Yes. Piper believes that if she can help Anna get back to her home, regain her memory, she wants to help Anna, but she also sees an opportunity to maybe collect a reward for herself for getting Anna home, because she thinks if she's protected by the king that she has to come from a wealthy family. And if Piper can get a reward for bringing her home, then maybe she can pull herself out of the scrap towns and out of poverty and start a new life for herself.
But it does not take too long of being with Anna for her to be torn. Piper realizes that there's really more at stake to this mission she finds herself on than just the idea of getting a reward at the end of it.
Yes, she does. She determines very early on that not only is Anna an important person, but she's also a target. She's a target of some very, very nasty people who want her for their own reasons. She doesn't know what those are, but early on she develops a protective instinct towards Anna, and the two of them become friends. That was one of the things that I loved exploring with these two characters, is they are so very different and they have different motivations, but it doesn't take long for them to find common ground and for them to come together and want to help each other and save each other.
It's a real touching development that as their relationship develops. It really – I thought that was one of the parts that was the most delightful about this.
Well, thank you. I loved writing – not only writing the banter back and forth between them because they can fight like sisters and they have that relationship. But yes, just to see the development and the bond that grows stronger between them as the story goes along. It was one of my favorite parts of the writing.
And then the bond is affected as well because they face danger on this train. It's not just they don't get on the train and instantly find themselves in Noveen. They're under the protection of a fairly young boy named G, who also turns out not to be exactly what he seems.
G is a very mysterious presence. He's the protector and the guardian of the 401 train. He's part of its crew. He's been a part of the train crew for most of his life. It's his home. And at first, when Piper and Anna come on board, he sees them as a threat to the safety of his home. And so he wants to get rid of them as soon as possible. But again, as the story moves along and he sees what danger they're in and what risk, he also develops a protective instinct towards the two girls and wants to help them.
Well, so we don't want to give away too much in this book, but there is a certain amount of self-discovery that's at the heart of it, it seems.
Yes, it's very much discovering your identity, discovering what strengths you have, what powers you have to affect change in the world and to protect the people that you care about, and also coming to terms with the scary parts of who you are and accepting yourself. Yeah, I hope that came through in the book because I really wanted that to be a part of the story in addition to the friendship and the working together.
What is it that appeals to you about the middle grade audience?
I like their sense of wonder. I have heard my writing described as kind of quirky, maybe a little bit romantic, maybe kind of odd, and kids for whatever reason seem to respond to that. They like the quirky characters. They like the detailed fantasy worlds. They like to get lost in them. They like to have enough detail that their imaginations can fill in the rest. And it seems like we mesh well together as reader and author. So I like that.
Well, and I wondered if the middle grade audience is especially open to a fantasy world that perhaps older readers, it might just take a little bit more getting them into this place that they don't know.
Right. It seems like kids are they're much more apt to join you on the journey. You know, they know that you'll explain enough about the world to, you know, have them centered, have them grounded, and then they're willing to and they're eager to see the fantastical creatures that inhabit it or the way it's different from our own world. They're much more eager to jump on board with you.
Well, Jillie Johnson, the book is terrific. Thank you so much for spending some time and sharing it with us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Illinois writer Jillie Johnson's new middle grade novel is called The Mark of the Dragonfly. Johnson was in the Milwaukee area recently to talk to students at schools in Elm Grove and New Berlin, and she joined us then. It's an older audience for Dale Kushner's novel, The Conditions of Love. We'll hear about that book when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.